From WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, North Carolina, it's the Coastline Candidate Interviews. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Today, our focus is largely on Oak Island in Brunswick County. We'll meet Kevin Lindsay and John Bach, both running for a seat on town council there. But first, we're going to spend some time with one of the two contenders for mayor in the town of Curie Beach. Emily Swearingen, the current mayor, is running again. However, she's seeking to rejoin Curie Beach government as a commissioner, a role she played before becoming mayor. That means the field is open. Craig Blazinski, a current member of council, is pursuing that seat, as is a political newcomer in Curie Beach, Chris Hald. Each candidate will talk one-on-one with me today, answering my questions and yours. There are a couple of ways to get your question in during the live Wednesday edition. You can call us at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. Curie Beach is the smallest of the three beach towns in New Hanover County, sandwiched between Fort Fisher and Carolina Beach. It's governed by a mayor and a town council of four commissioners. Joining me now is Chris Hald, who is competing with Craig Blazinski for the mayoral seat in Curie Beach. Blazinski is a current commissioner, Chris Hald a newcomer. Chris Hald has lived in Texas, Colorado, New York, Honduras, and Georgia before landing in Curie Beach. He served in the U.S. Army as a combat engineer for 4 years. He's also worked in the service industry, including at the Rainbow Room, the Swiss Drake Hotel, the New Yorker Hotel, and the Metropolitan Museum of Art. Chris Hald, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you very much.
You begin your candidate statement with what you would not do as mayor of Curie Beach. And as you phrase it, you will not put your nose into the police and fire departments. You will leave that to the professionals. What do you mean by that? What's happening now with current council or the mayor to make you say that?
I think the police department and the fire department are A1. And there's no reason for me to have to check on them because they're professionals and I'm not a professional person. I wouldn't know how to arrest a person or even arrest myself. We have no crime at all almost in Curie Beach. It's very small community. The average age of a person there is about 53. But we do have crime and the police department handle it very well. As mayor, that's not really my job. It's the police chief's job or the fire chief's job to delegate what should be done. If they want my advice, I'll be happy to give it. But as I said, I like to leave that to the people that have been trained professionally.
You say that you also have a residence in New York City, and New York City has been your home for many years, as well as Curie Beach, and you have connections to Wilmington. Why? And you also say that after the election, you'll travel back to New York City, regardless of the way the election goes. Why do you want to be mayor of Curie Beach, especially if you're not here all the time?
Well, I am here basically all the time now because I adopted a dog, and he's an outdoor dog, and he likes the backyard. So my wife and I are living between a dog. He doesn't like it up in New York, so he likes the backyard. That's why I'm here. Reason why I wanted to run for mayor is because there was a survey, and the city council proposed to have a new, bigger police station and fire department. And there was a survey. 20% said yes, 20% said they didn't know, and 60% said they didn't want any growth at all of the city hall or the fire department or the police department.
Which is underway now. There's an expansion going on.
Yes, and they proposed this and put that in motion before the citizens even knew about it. And I just felt that living in a country where there's democracy and the voters should have the last say, the city council and the mayor are still going on with it. And I think that if 60% of the community says no, the city council and the mayor should listen to the people.
You also have some ideas relating to maintaining property values. What are those?
Trying to keep Curie Beach as pristine as possible. Our infrastructure, I think, right now is more important than the police department or the fire department because of hurricanes, hard rains, flooding. And we just need to worry about how to get the water out and drained out and back into the ocean, or have some kind of a sewage system that's a little better than it is now.
And how would you move forward with improving the flooding issue in Curie Beach?
I would, have a better drainage system, especially in the flood zones. And it just have to dig into the ground, have pipes, and just like in any city, and when the rain comes in, it goes into the pipes and it'll be taken back out to the ocean. I'm even thinking, just off the top of my head, just to like have plastic containers, maybe 8 feet by 8 feet, that could, on wheels, that could catch the rain and could be taken back and have some kind of a plastic pipe or to drain it back into the water. We have to worry about our beaches, replenishing it with sand.
How would you, everybody, all the beach towns are struggling to find that magic formula for beach nourishment funding and shoreline protection. What do you think the formula should look like?
Well, I don't understand why when you get a paycheck, it says in the back, federal is taken out, state is taken out, but it's never itemized. We live close to a Sunny Point, and we live close to energy with the uranium. I can't think of it right now.
A nuclear power plant?
Nuclear power plant. And they're very close by. And I think that the federal government, which is us and our tax money, we should be able to have a little bit more money to help Curie Beach. And we shouldn't have to, we need more money. And the federal government needs to give us more money to work on our beaches and to work on our drainage system. Because if something happens, you know, I'm looking at it as where if people have to be evacuated, they have to fly into Curie and then fly to New Haven Hospital or something, New Hanover, I should say. We just need to be more diligent about Mother Nature. And I just think the infrastructure is most important.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. With us now is Curie Beach mayoral candidate Chris Hald. You can ask your own question during this live Wednesday edition by calling us at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. Chris Hald, you say that you support term limits for council persons and the mayor. Where does that come from? Who are you concerned about? Who's been in office too long in Curie Beach?
No one. I just think it's better to term limits, two terms for each city council person, two terms for the mayor. Fresh blood, fresh ideas. I think I'm not picking names or anything, but I'm just saying people get comfortable, and there's people that are, might have better ideas and they can implement them better if they're sitting in the seat making the decisions. And I just think term limits are a good idea.
So if we imagine you as fresh blood and new ideas, throw out your best idea. What is the one thing that you think could materially change Curie Beach for the better?
By leaving it alone. The 5.5 million, it was 5 million, now it's 5.5 million for the fire department and the police department. I would buy every lot that's available, and I just let nature take it over and let the trees grow, and it would be good for high winds. And if there's a hurricane or something, it would catch things that are flying. We can't handle the growth that we have now with the infrastructure we have.
So your strategy is to essentially stop growth and stop people from moving in.
Well, if the city owns some of the lots and let it go back to where nature had it at one time, Yes, and it would increase houses, prices of houses. It's like in New York City, in Manhattan, apartments are very hard to come by because there's a shortage of apartments. There's a shortage of housing. We don't have that. We only have one gas station. We have three restaurants. We have a pier and one bar. So, and the infrastructure in the roads are the most important thing. It's just on Old River Road, all the houses and stuff that are going to be built, they're going to come over to Curry Beach, and it's going to be first come, first serve. And the parking's going to be tough, and we can't handle it all. So I think the infrastructure should be first.
We're talking with Chris Hald. He's running for mayor of Curry Beach. You can ask your own question. We have a few minutes left during the live Wednesday edition of this interview. You can call us at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. Chris Hald, you also say that leaving only a few to make decisions is worrisome to you, but if you were elected as mayor, you would be one of those few. Certainly the structure of the town government isn't going to change. And people elect representatives so that that group, that those few people can enact policy. So how would this be different if you were elected? What do you really mean by that statement?
My statement's very simple. The survey went out. 20% said they did not want the 20% said yes, fire department and the police department should be expanded. 20% said they didn't know. And 60% said they didn't want any expansion.
So
I would go with the 60%. I would throw out any ideas that the city council has or I have to make the improve Curry Beach. If the citizens want it, that's the way it goes. But I mean, the survey says 60% they don't want it, and the city council started this before even notifying the citizens of Curry Beach.
Curry Beach spends a significant portion of its money from the room occupancy tax on advertising for the town. Do you think the advertising is effective and that Curry Beach does a good job of distinguishing itself from nearby beach towns like Carolina Beach or Baldhead Island or Wrightsville Beach? And does it need to?
I don't think so. Curry Beach is famous. We have it was one of the last battlegrounds of the Civil War. Everybody in Wilmington knows where it is, and we can advertise, but as I said, we don't have that much space. I mean, people come every summer, years and years. So advertising is great, but the people that are going to come are the people that are the regulars that come every summer and stay and bring their families like they've done for 10, 15, 20 years.
You've talked about letting town-owned lots just go back to being overgrown and letting trees grow up on them. Do you think that Curry Beach needs to do anything to enhance its downtown business district?
No, I want Curry Beach to be as pristine as possible. I don't want any huge growth. We can't. Sandy Point says we can't build anything past 35 feet. And I just would like to have a very pristine and very much a little small, nice little beach town. And I think we need more federal money. And that's one thing I'm going to try to do if I become mayor is buttonhole these guys up in the Capitol and up in D.C. and ask them, why aren't we getting more money? Because we're at the mouth of Fair River, and it's a very strategic point.
What would you think? Curry Beach and Carolina Beach have differing regulations when it comes to issues like golf carts and like dogs on the beach. That can be confusing for tourists who don't know where the line is or that, in fact, there is a line and regulations change. Would you ever consider consolidating the two towns or collaborating more with Carolina Beach?
The fire department, police department work in tandem. They help each other out, and they do a great job. The dogs on the beach, Just to have a sign, you know, this is Curry, you're entering Curry Beach, and or you're leaving Curry Beach. Just like if you're driving in a car, someone on a beach should be able to read the sign and the rules of Curry Beach or the rules of Carolina Beach about having dogs on the beach. I just want to say I'm against oil drilling, and I'd like to say something about the people talking about the windmills in the ocean and stuff like that. Solar panels on housing would be just as effective. And I don't know why anybody would want to put a windmill out in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean.
So you oppose offshore wind?
Yes.
Now, as a member of town council, you certainly would not have policymaking authority. So how would you leverage your opinions into policy? What would you do about that?
Well, I would this is how I feel. If the city people want it, fine. But I mean, the people would have to say yes or no for it. But I'm against it.
Chris Hald, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. When we come back from this 90-second break, our focus turns to Oak Island. We'll meet Town Council candidate Kevin Lindsay, and we're taking your questions on this live Wednesday edition at coastline@whqr.org or 910-343-1138. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Our focus now is on Oak Island, a beach town in Brunswick County that boasts a year-round population of about 7,700. During the summer months, that number can swell to 50,000. There are two open seats on Oak Island's town council this year, seven names on the ballot. Earlier this week, one of the candidates, Natasha Tatum, told us she's no longer an active candidate. Because of the late date, however, her name will still be on the ballot. Incumbent Loman Scott is running for re-election. Dara Royal, who was appointed to fill out Jim Medlin's term after he moved away, is not running again. Joining me now is Kevin Lindsay, one of the six active candidates hoping for one of those two seats on Oak Island's town council. Kevin Lindsay is a retired public school educator and principal of 40 years. He retired with his wife, Betty, 4 years ago after vacationing on Oak Island, he says, for many years. He is the current treasurer for Oak Island Beach Preservation. He also volunteers for Oak Island Water Rescue. While he says he's worked with others on political campaigns, this is his first run at elected office. Kevin Lindsay, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you, Rachel. It's really nice to be here.
Nice to have you here. And you can ask your own question of Kevin Lindsay on this Wednesday edition by calling us at 910-343-1138. You can also email us right now at coastline@whqr.org. Kevin Lindsay, there's usually a galvanizing issue for people when they decide to run for municipal office. What was it for you?
I think it was the sand replenishment idea. I knew that it was coming. I knew that there was a lot of discussion about it. My questions were, and I didn't originally support it because, to me, I can't support something unless I know all the answers to it, and there were no answers to be had. So I initially said I can't support it. Once I realized that that is not the best way to approach this discussion, I changed that to, yes, I understand the sand is needed, but I still have my major questions, and I'm still waiting for some answers on those.
And there are a lot of components to the shoreline preservation issue on Oak Island. The
right.
town has recently learned that it's going to be the recipient of about $15 million from different sources, state and federal sources. So what are your major questions now, and what's your concern about the direction it's going?
Well, the direction it's going, my major questions were, number one, how's it going to be paid for? Certainly the town has given no indication that they're going to have that kind of cash on hand. They floated around the idea of assessments. It's a tiered assessment, so depending on your proximity to the beach, you would be charged so much, but that's not official. The time frame is not so official. As well as my question, there was some discussion, well, we're going to take care of people with hardships, but I'm sorry. Telling me you're going to do that is very different from letting me see something or hearing something very definitive, because on Oak Island, there are some people. The stories are that they're being driven off of the island because they can't afford it, and that is a major concern. Other than the assessments, my other concern is about the preservation. You're buying a new product, and there's absolutely no discussion that I've heard of about how we're going to protect this product over the next few years. Are we going to invest in an urban forester? Are we going to increase the type of plants that we're going to plant in the dunes in order to save them, to retain them, to try to help them out? Equally important, is there any discussion about sand fences or building walkways over the dunes? There are a whole bunch of ideas out there that need to be explored. So we're buying a new product again, and we haven't taken it to the next stop. Once it's there, what are we going to do to save it?
So let's paint the picture then. Let's say you don't have to build consensus or convince anyone else of the direction. What does shoreline preservation strategy look like?
The right idea is that they're bringing in the sand presently. It's called emergency sand, and it will take several years for it to develop. Over the next couple of months, they'll keep bringing in sand, and this project will go on for a couple of months, a couple of years. Ultimately, I'm hoping right now what they're talking about is a recreational beach, which is very different from an engineered beach. An engineered beach means that FEMA will now, as long as you keep it up and do the things that are standards of FEMA, they will then give you money if a major storm comes and washes it away. So right now the plan is it's a recreational beach. I'd like to know where their thoughts are about maybe looking at the next step and making it an engineered beach. I know that Holden Beach did the same thing. It started out recreational and ended up being an engineered beach.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. With us now is Oak Island Town Council candidate Kevin Lindsay. You can ask your own question during the live Wednesday discussion by calling us at 910-343-1138 or by emailing us today at coastline@whqr.org. One candidate for mayor on Oak Island says that leaders need to better understand the natural forces that are at work on the beach and need to harness those forces rather than work against them. One example that this person used was stop fighting nature and stop dredging Lockwood Folly.
That question was posed at one of the forums. I have to agree with a lot of the things that were said. I mean, nature is a powerful force. Hopefully the engineered beach that we're going to develop is one that can sustain the winds and the rains and the tides. Again, I'm hoping that there's more that we can do to the dunes that will help them sustain that a little bit better. Artificially, I know of some areas throughout the world that have used temporary barriers. They're plastic, you fill them with water, and during storm surge times, they're used to stave off the harming tides and waves that are coming through. As far as Lockwood Folly goes, I'm not supportive of that because it's very expensive. The shifting sands in Lockwood Folly.
You're not supportive of continuing to dredge?
No. There is no end in sight. Plus, there are other municipalities that use that as well. So there has to be a discussion. If you want to have Oak Island Council talk about supporting it, then you need to bring other people to the table who also have an interest in this. It can't be carried by one municipality alone.
Is Oak Island carrying that cost? Is that not on Brunswick County?
Presently, I believe $30,000 was given. The responsibility has been up to the Coast Guard and the Engineer Corps. Unfortunately, they're saying we're not doing it anymore. It's more of a recreational rather than a navigational necessity. So therefore, someone needs to pick up the cost of that, and I do not see that being carried by Oak Island alone.
Would you ever consider, if it was up to you, applying for a permit for a terminal groin?
Oh, yes. I mean, I'm up for anything that would benefit the island. But it comes down to making decisions and finding out how much is it going to cost, how long will it last, and what are the benefits for the community.
We had an email from Maury. She writes, Do you plan to enforce the ordinance against clear-cutting lots for development? She writes, we live on the West End, where most lots are completely cleared. What about the environmental impact of destroying virtually all of the old-growth trees?
And that actually came up in one of the discussions. I had a conversation with a contractor once, and name not being mentioned, the comment basically was, we are kind of self-regulated. We do the best we can, but we're self-regulated. Really, there is not a lot of oversight with this. I brought up at one of the forums that we need to get the inspectors, get the supervisors out there, and it's not just about the new homes, but it's all parts of the island. Again, that's why I would like to see them hire or rehire. They had one several years ago, an urban forester.
Is there a clear ordinance right now? Is it a question of enforcement?
There is a clear ordinance. I believe that there is a question of enforcement, but that becomes even more critical now that the vegetation line along the shore has been pulled back. So now all the shorefront properties are being built upon, and it's essential that the supervisors and the investigators not only look at it before the project begins, but during the project and then afterwards, because my feeling is we've given a lot of leeway to the builders on the island because we went to business, but it needs to be a little bit more supervised to make sure that we're getting our bang for the buck.
You mentioned earlier being concerned about people no longer being able to afford their properties.
Correct.
On Oak Island.
Right.
How do you think Oak Island needs to grow? How would you manage the explosive growth, certainly, that's happening in Brunswick County?
That's a great question. It's been brought up several times. I think it's essential that we come up with a strategic plan. And a strategic plan, we already have an urban land use plan that needs to be combined in a greater, bigger picture. That would be a strategic plan as to where we're going in the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years. I think that's a very manageable thing. The information is out there. We need to inform the citizens of thoughts and ideas that we're having, have public forums to talk about it. But I don't think it would be difficult or terribly impossible to come up with a strategic plan that will guide us into the future as far as where the island will be.
So you have this moment. Let's fast forward 4 years. Let's say you've won the seat and you're looking back and you were able to bring a key idea to deal with. Or to help shape the growth of Oak Island. What was that idea? What's the one thing you think Oak Island is missing that leaders really need to focus on?
I think the one thing that we really need to do, and I would like to see the council do, is to really open themselves up more to the community. For the first time, I had seen an open forum on October where the citizens were invited, and there was a discussion for about an hour. Well, that was the beginning. I don't know why that can't continue ongoing. I think it's essential that people have a voice. And I know we hear that all the time in politics, but truly, people are not being heard. Their ideas are not being cultivated. I think our present board or council is somewhat seclusive, and I would like to see them have more opportunities to involve themselves with the citizens.
So you mentioned then a public forum. There are certainly public hearings that take place mandated public hearings.
Well, there are. There are. But if you go to a public hearing and you want to say something, first of all, you're only responding before the motion is passed, and you're given 3 minutes, in which time there is really not a dialogue between you and the council members. You simply address your concerns, they thank you, and you go back and sit down, and then they vote. That's not enough. People have a lot more to say, and I think the town council can certainly afford the opportunity to have more discussions where the people get to respond to them rather than just hearing what they have to say.
Oak Island, like many coastal communities in the Cape Fear region, faces a pretty serious opioid abuse problem. And certainly there are federal and state initiatives to attack the problem. We just heard a press conference this morning, Wednesday morning, that New Hanover County is going to file its own lawsuit. I believe Wilmington is also against distributors of opioids and manufacturers. Is there anything that the town of Oak Island needs to do to start to address this public health issue?
I'll go back to the idea of public information. I think we've all heard information about the opioid use and misuse. We've seen it in print. I think people would very much like to have some open discussions about that as well. What can we do as a community that we haven't thought of? I know the police department has invested just 18 months ago, received $250,000 for more investigators and the ability to do other investigations as far as people who are selling. I think on a more positive note, we can do more as far as informing the public of what they can do. For example, I think there are people who know of other people who have any use or abuse or may have need. I would like to have more discussions about where can they turn, where can they go, because not everybody reads the paper, not everybody listens to the television. Publicize some information so that people can go and listen and learn.
Oak Island purchases water from Brunswick County, which gets its water from the Cape Fear River. We know Gen X is just a tiny component of the potentially toxic chemical cocktail that's in the river that can't be removed with traditional water treatment. Is there anything Oak Island needs to do specifically to ensure a safe and reliable water supply?
That question actually came up at one of the forums, and I believe that the mayor and the current council is doing what they need to do in order to protect the water source. What can they do differently? I don't see anything right now, but they need to lend support, information, and whatever statistics they have to the state and federal level so that they can go ahead with their lawsuits.
From where you sit, what's the state of the sewer system on Oak Island? Is it going in the right direction, or is there still some work that needs to be done?
There's always work that's going to be done. They're always doing upgrades. But the sewer system on Oak Island is a done deal. It's called an enterprise system. When it was put in, the cost is high, and people will continue to pay that amount. The only hope that they may have is with the new water system, in which electronically controlled, people might actually get a rebate if they don't use all the water. But that has to be determined.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. Kevin Lindsay, that's our time. Thank you so much for being with us.
I had a good time.
When we come back from this 90-second break, we'll meet Oak Island Town Council candidate John Bach, and we're taking your questions on the Live Wednesday edition at 910-343-1138 or coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Our focus right now is on Oak Island, a beach town of about 7,700 people year-round in Brunswick County. That number can swell to up to 50,000 during the summer season. The town is governed by a council of five and a mayor. Joining me now is John Bach, a former superintendent at Moorestown Township Public Schools in New Jersey. He says he's volunteered on Oak Island's Comprehensive Planning Committee, Beach and Inlet Committee, Par 3 Golf Committee, and is a member of the Communities in Schools Board. John Bach, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And you can ask your own question of John Bach by emailing us at coastline@whqr.org or calling us during the Live Wednesday edition at 910-343-1138. John Bach, I'm going to start with a question from Martin, who says, permanent residents are 7,000 and seasonal is 50,000. When will Oak Island charge for parking for beach nourishment?
Well, that's a great question. And I think that ultimately, beach parking needs to be part of a comprehensive solution to provide for beach nourishment. Thrice, town council has considered this and thrice rejected it. I would argue that as we look at beach renourishment, we need to have several streams of revenue. Parking is clearly going to be one. Parking is a complicated issue because of the right-of-way, because of property rights for residents. And I would support another comprehensive plan which indeed satisfies the needs of residents for ordinance enforcement, but provides for a revenue stream. I do think that a parking plan would certainly have to provide for parking for residents for free, those paying the accommodation tax for free, but all other users of the beach, I think, should be charged. Council has rejected previous plans, arguing they have not been lucrative enough. It seems to me that we need to explore that. To reject a plan that generates $100,000, which is $1 million over a decade, seems to me to be something that should be reconsidered. So I think it is part of the ultimate solution to beach renourishment, but not the most pressing issue at this point.
One could argue that the government on Oak Island is having some impressive success finding new funding for sand on the beach. The town of Oak Island is going to be the recipient of about $15 million in money from federal and state sources. Some of that comes from FEMA, which was emergency funding from Hurricane Matthew. And the current government says they started working on that funding when they knew a storm was on the way, before Hurricane Matthew even got here. Do you agree with the town's current direction with shoreline preservation, that strategy? Why or why not?
Well, let me first of all compliment town council and the mayor for their efforts. I think as we anticipate this funding, we can make some progress. They deserve credit for lobbying effectively. But I do think that the direction is yet to be set. My direction would be this, that I support the Ravello report, which I know you've mentioned before in your reporting. I support the Carter report. I support an engineered beach. I support the longest-term, highest-value beach renourishment plan.
So having a recreational beach is not sufficient. You don't want to stop there.
I think it is highly risky. We're talking about a multi-million dollar investment, and we're talking about return on value. And I would say that distinguishes me from the other candidates in the field who either oppose beach renourishment or want to go part of the way, assuming that someone else is going to pay for it. And I think the issue is this. While we have made some progress, and certainly FEMA has propelled us forward, the issue here is long-term beach preservation, returning value to the taxpayer, and providing for the 8,000 new residents that are projected over the next 10 years. I am the only candidate promoting an engineered beach. I stand by that. All of the experts who have appeared before council, Ravello, Carter, Moffitt, and Nichols, have recommended that solution. So yes, there's some progress, and I compliment town council. But in terms of setting a direction for the future, no, I don't think we're there. I think there's work to be done.
What would the funding formula be for that?
Well, there are several options which have been presented. If you look at Ravello proposed taxation based on proximity to the beach, a general tax, and then proximity by zone. The Carter Financial Group augmented that by saying, well, we could have that sort of a taxation plan, but also, if possible, by collateralizing the assets of the island, we could have special obligation bonds, which would defer further. I think the point here and the other critical difference between myself, council, and the other candidates, for the most part, I'm going to qualify that, I adamantly oppose the current direction, which is assessments. First of all, I think they're unwieldy. I think they have great potential to entangle us in litigation. And perhaps most importantly, they're not tax deductible. So I think that's the wrong way to go. It's contrary to the advice of our financial consultant. And it seems to me if we're going to commission these reports, we should give them due diligence, and hopefully one would think we'd adopt them.
Are you concerned at all about pricing people out of being able to own property on Oak Island?
Absolutely a concern. One of the things that the Ravello report does, you probably know this if you've read it, is it attempts to create, recommends an exception for seniors, those on a fixed income. And I think within the boundary of the law, we ought to be doing that. We ought to be thinking about that.
Lockwood Folly Inlet, as we know, provides an important outlet between Oak Island and Holden Beach. And historically, of course, it's been difficult for officials to find money to keep this dredged. There is one candidate who says just the dredging of Lockwood Folly Inlet is a waste of money and it just should be ended and let nature take its course. Where do you stand on that issue?
Well, I'm not a naturalist to that degree. I think letting nature take its course is a dangerous proposition. I think it's an inconvenient necessity, frankly. Both our commercial and recreational users depend on it. We're committed by virtue of past practice to an interlocal agreement. The bulk of the funding now comes from the county. Unfortunately, the federal government has withdrawn its commitment. And Holden and Oak Island contribute $28,000 last year for Oak Island. I think my issue with Lockwood Folly dredging is that we need to receive our fair share of the sand, and that's going to involve working with the Corps to get a different dredge in there. But I think long-term, we need to find a more viable solution so that we don't keep spending money draining Lockwood Folly every year. But in the interim, I don't see an alternative, and I certainly would not rely on nature to put the sand where we want it to go.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. We're talking with Oak Island Town Council candidate John Bach. You can ask your own question during the live Wednesday edition by emailing us at coastline@whqr.org or by calling 910-343-1138. And we have a couple of people who've called in with questions. Nancy says, 7 years ago, there was a sewer line assessment done by property owners. This cost was $4,200. Some property owners did not pay for this assessment. How do you plan to recoup the funds, she asks.
Well, first of all, it underscores my point about assessments. Let's just start there and why they're not desirable. Again, I give the current administration credit for trying to recoup those assessments. To me, having paid the $4,200 in full, I might add, it's quite frustrating that any number of people were not compelled to meet their legal obligation. And for some time, we had, frankly, a lot of drift on that issue. I think the current administration is serious about collecting not only the assessments, but also the accommodation tax. So again, I give them credit for that. And I think when you receive a public service, you're obligated to pay for it. That's a condition of living on the island.
We have a question from Oscar, who says he's concerned about the ordinance about boats not being anchored in waterways for longer than 30 days. The town said it would not spend money enforcing this, but they are spending money on it. Why do these people, Oscar asks, have to suffer when they cannot pay fees for marina housing? Why not use a nearby moor at a cheaper cost so the town can get the money?
Well, I think there's a broader issue here, Rachel. And I think the topic that's come up repeatedly in the forums that I've attended, and I've attended all of the forums, goes to sort of this nub. If we're going to have ordinances, and indeed we have quite a few of them, and we're in the process of creating a unified development ordinance, a UDO, a kind of compilation of all the ordinances, then we need to enforce our ordinances consistently, fairly, without regard to special exception or interest. And that's been an issue that's come up repeatedly where people have said we don't enforce our ordinances. And obviously, I think the first thing that we need to do before we approve the UDO is make sure that these are the ordinances that we desire, they have the effect that we want, and that they are enforceable.
What does council need to do to better, speaking of ordinances, to better protect the trees on Oak Island?
Well, you're preaching to the choir here on that one. As you may know, one of the tenets of my campaign has been saving the tree canopy. And we have a situation here, I would call it a clash of virtues. On the one side, we have the storm water management ordinance, which according to builders, and I believe them, I talked to a number of builders, has restricted their ability to save trees. On the other side, we have a tree ordinance, which is currently in place, which is minimalist, 5 trees, 1.25 inches. And in effect, what's happened on the island, particularly on my street, I might say, this is a very personal issue for me, is clear cutting. Call it what you will, it essentially is clear cutting. It blots the landscape. So it seems to me we can't change the state requirements for stormwater management. We can change our ordinance, and we can work together, hopefully cooperatively, the owner, because there are property rights involved, the developer, and the town to provide for a stronger tree canopy preservation, and we can incentivize replanting. It can be done. And I'll give you an example. There are 4 lots on my street that have recently been developed. There is one that has saved 27 trees, and there's a beautiful house going up there. The others have the minimum requirement of 5, and they're essentially clear cut. That's the difference. I'm prepared to fight for a tree canopy ordinance that is sensible and that people can support across the board.
This is an issue that the city of Southport has grappled with for years in terms of being able to actually write something that is enforceable and that is reasonable and that accomplishes the end of allowing responsible growth and preserving some of these spectacular live oaks. Do you know what that ordinance needs to look like?
Well, I know what the ordinance needs to look like in terms of the concept. To be fair, my understanding is that Southport created an ordinance, but it's met with opposition and met with some technical questions, and I know they had an arborist involved. Oak Island was down that same path earlier. This is complicated stuff. My point is, rather than give up or to say, as some folks have said, hey, there's no clear cutting, everything is fine, we need to go back and revisit it. And I have no illusions. This is going to be very difficult. It's going to require consensus building. It's going to require bringing people to the table. And frankly, I think that's what we need to do if we're going to save our tree canopy on the island. And we're not yet talking in this conversation about the 7,000 acres on the mainland, which are going to be developed, which is the long-term strategic planning issue, which you know is also one of my campaign tenets.
Well, go ahead and tell us about that. Where would you like to see that go?
Well, I think the issue is that we need to be proactive, not reactive. We need a plan, a strategic plan, which is accessible to the public. They understand the direction the town's taking. What that does is it saves money, it returns value in the long run. So it focuses your energy, it sets priorities, it directs resources, it confirms strategies. I mean, there are a lot of benefits to having a strategic plan, and obviously it would be built on the basis of the land use plan, which I served on that committee, and on the UDO. But it needs to be a document that is synthesized and is simple enough that we can present it to the public and they can endorse it. Otherwise, what you have is drift. You have special pleading. You have one-off exceptions. And it becomes very difficult to create the kind of community, I think, that we want. If you look at the land use survey, and my wife and I conducted a number of those, probably 500 of those, people are very consistent in what they want. They want the beach to be preserved. They want growth to be managed. They don't want to be overwhelmed. They don't want high-rise development. They want to preserve the tree canopy. I mean, it's very clear what the public wants, but we don't have a plan to deliver that.
So how would you approach, for example, growth? I mean, we've talked about the fact that explosive growth is a factor in Brunswick County. Mm-hmm. How do you preserve, Alan asks specifically, how would you preserve that balance future growth with maintaining the small town feel?
Sure. And that is the prime reason, the driver to have a strategic plan, I might add. I think that you have to have in place a concept of what you want. You can't have policy without a vision. So I agree, preserving the small town values, the environment, the aesthetic of the community, the friendliness, et cetera, is going to take a plan, and it's going to take a zoning plan, specifically in terms of land use, that is consistently applied.
And that's our time, John Bach. Yes, it flies. Thank you so much for being with us
today.
Thank
you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks also to Kevin Lindsay and Chris Hald. Coastline's technical director is Ken Campbell. Associate producer is Rachel Keith. Production assistant is Caitlin Hanrahan. Caroline DeVries is our webmaster. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at whqr.org, get the podcast, or find it on the WHQR app. Tune in for the rebroadcast of this episode Sunday afternoon at 3. Join us for Coastline Live Wednesdays and Thursdays at noon here on HQR News 91.3 and 98.9 FM. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.